Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week, Lockwood explains to me why so many people in America are opposed to gun control. It's very interesting. I hope you agree with me.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we begin the program, just to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping schedule of our host, our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He's joining us from London, and it's a five-hour time difference, so as we are airing this, it's nearly midnight his time. But with that, Tom, a good afternoon or good evening, and I understand it might be winter-like in your community. How's the weather?
Yeah, the weather is big news. I'm looking out on a snow scene. Yes, white stuff everywhere.
How often?
Fortunately, I'm sitting here inside.
Well, how often do you see snow in London? I mean, how rare is this or unusual?
Maybe on average once a year, I'd say. It's not particularly thick here at the moment, but in other parts of the country it is. Quite often we will have a year without any snow at all. But it's not just the UK. I mean, they've had their first snowfall in Rome for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Last month, they had their first snowfall in the Sahara Desert for 50 years.
That just goes to show that nothing stays the same. And with that, I'm curious: has traffic stopped in London? How does London?
Yeah, they've stopped a lot of the trains.
Oh, really? Really?
A lot of the trains have stopped because the points are frozen. The points that are manage the brakes,
mm-hmm.
not the brakes, the changing tracks and things, the lights. Have frozen, and so they've stopped those. A lot of the motorways are now closed, the interstate highways. London itself is not too badly affected, but that's not to say it won't be. We're in a cold snap. Apparently what's happening is that there is a Siberian wind. The wind has changed direction,
mm-hmm.
because there is a sort of circular wind that's going around the North Pole. And it normally goes from east to west,
mm-hmm.
but it's changed directions. And that has meant that the general wind has changed as well. Normally our wind comes from the west, and it comes via the Gulf Stream up from the Caribbean, which means we have palm trees
right.
in the southwest and southern part of England.
Right.
But now all the wind is coming from Siberia.
Not only are we looking at snow, we're looking at much colder temperatures.
Well, much, much colder temperatures. It's been freezing day after day.
Well, we've had that experience here in the States back in late December and early January. So misery loves company, as they say. Moving on, and with that comment about weather and the issue of news, let's talk about how the press there in the United Kingdom and Europe are handling the events in the United States. I want to go straight to the U.S. first. The topic, of course, Parkland, Florida. We chatted about that last week briefly. The continuing conversation here in the States. What is the coverage there in the European press?
It's wall to wall. I mean, yeah, they're really? Still writing extensively about gun control. And they start from the premise, of course, you know, exact opposite of a lot of conservatives in America, where they cannot understand the opposition to gun control. It's just a complete inability to understand why the Americans are opposed to gun control, as it is, I think, a complete inability on the other side of the Atlantic why people would want gun control. There's a complete divide. I have to give a lecture next week when I have to try and explain it, and it's not going to be easy.
The interesting difference here, and we are here in the States watching what's taking place around the world every day, as a matter of fact, is we here in the States, the general populace, have a constant friction, if you will, if not even borders on a distrust of government. We see this as a last, if you will, last bastion of control and the ability to restrict government. You've got to remember, we here in the States distinctly recall, because it's still relatively fresh in our minds, the events of over 300 years ago when we cast off a government that we felt was being rather heavy-handed and quite frankly—
They were nice people.
Excuse me? They were nice.
They were nice people.
Well, and of course, we're talking to, by the way, I've got to remind everyone that Tom Arms with us this afternoon of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio, himself an expat. Am I correct? Your wife, Eileen?
Yes, I quite like Brits. Yeah. That's why I live here.
Yeah. But we're proud that you decided to move to England, the United Kingdom. But at the same time, here we in the States still look at our 10 amendments, our Bill of Rights, as being a critical issue here in the States. We're very sensitive about that, and we do everything we can to protect and enhance those first 10 amendments. They're important to us.
Yes, well, as one newspaper said here, I think it was The Times, wrote an article saying that it's a pity that Americans seem to forget the first word in that famous phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness,
mm-hmm.
and that they were inalienable rights, and that if life is inalienable right,
and the protection thereof. While you look at that one event, and I say you, the European community, we look at it as an aspect of where we've seen despots, and we've seen it around the world. Trust me, the U.S. has had to step up on numerous occasions to fight back tyranny. Recent World War events are of note, and of course, events in other countries, Iraq, for example. So, you know, we take a very dim view of tyranny. So, yeah, while I appreciate the issue of life, associated with life is that liberty aspect. We recognize that as a populace, general populace, that we feel that we have a responsibility. That's a difference between us and, I would argue, first world countries, which, of course, are old world countries, classical countries. We've watched with interest over the years the continuing effort to discard tyrannical government, and we take that seriously here in the States.
Yes, well, that was quite clear from what Wayne LaPierre said, and a lot of people have pointed to that, and they find it, a lot of people here in Europe find it a bit upsetting that you feel you have to be protected from your government, that really the purpose of government is to protect you.
Yes.
Not for you to be protected from it.
Tom, here's a quick question. Has the stories about the events in Parkland related to the FBI and also the Sheriff's Department, local law enforcement, the number of occasions?
Yes, they've all been reported in great detail.
And does that
they've all been reported in great detail. And also Trump's assertion that he would be the first one to rush in there unarmed.
Well,
to throw himself in front of the assassin bullet.
Well,
all that has been reported in great detail, and it's basically been reported in the context of a distraction from the real issue.
Really?
And the real issue is whether or not you should have gun control.
You said you see government as protecting people. Government had the opportunity for several years to prepare for the protection of these students.
Well, you're in a very sad state of affairs if your government can't protect you.
Exactly.
I think you have to accept that.
And we recognize that. You know, it is interesting. All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break on that. We're going to continue this conversation for a few more moments here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with the expanded world analysis from LookAheadNews.com. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Formal Brexit talks resume in Brussels on Monday. On the same day, British Prime Minister Theresa May will reveal to Parliament her vision for a post-Brexit Britain. The main sticking points appear to be British membership of the Customs Union and Northern Ireland. The European Union, meanwhile, carries on planning for Europe without Britain. On Tuesday, EU defence ministers meet in Brussels to discuss the Permanent Structured Cooperation, also known as PESCO, the hoped-for military arm of the EU. EU mayors discuss combating terrorism at a special conference on Thursday. The conference is focused on developing urban designs to prevent terrorist attacks. French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian is expected to fly off to Tehran on Monday to discuss the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. In January, President Trump called on the other signatories to the agreement, Britain, France, Germany, Russia and China, to fix the deal, or the US would withdraw. Also in France, the right-wing Front National holds its annual party congress. The main agenda item will be a proposal from leader Marine Le Pen to change the party name. Her father, the former party leader Jean-Marie Le Pen, has branded the proposal as political suicide. Donald Trump has two foreign visitors next week. The first one is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who arrives at the White House on Monday for discussions on Iran, Syria, the Palestinians, and the opening of the new U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. He will be followed on Tuesday by the Swedish Prime Minister. China's National People's Congress starts a 10-day meeting next week. It is expected to rubber stamp a proposal for President Xi Jinping to remain in office indefinitely. Cardinal George Pell, Australia's top Roman Catholic figure and the third man in the Vatican, is in court on Monday for a committal hearing involving sex charges. 50 witnesses are expected to testify. Cardinal Pell said he cannot wait to defend his name. Oil giants Shell and Eni are on trial for bribery in a Milan court on Monday. It is claimed that they paid out $1 billion to secure a Nigerian offshore oil field. Cars, cars, and more cars will be on display from Thursday at the Geneva Motor Show, the car industry's most prestigious exhibition. Luxury cars being launched include the new $2.6 million Bugatti. In Prague, right-wing Czech President Milos Zeman will be sworn in on Thursday, the same day that billionaire Sebastian Piñera takes over the presidential reins in Chile. Sierra Leone stages its presidential elections on Wednesday. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just a few moments ago, Tom and I were, well, in a rather aggressive conversation, so I shouldn't say heated, but a debate on the issue of government protective authority. You know, the aspect of this, Tom, and this is one that's very frustrating to me personally, is the fact that we had local law enforcement and the FBI. Now, by the way, this is the second time that we've known, and I'm going to identify the other time, where the FBI has failed to react and respond to circumstances that deserved concern. Dylan Roof was a perfect example, and that was the shooter down in Charleston, South Carolina, in a church shooting. Actually, it was a prayer meeting that evening, but it was in the basement of the church. And that individual was supposed to be denied access to weapons, but the FBI failed to follow through on some of its documentation. As a matter of fact, 24 hours later is when they completed their denial process. The point of the matter is, this is proof positive that we cannot always rely on government to fulfill its stated benefits of protecting the public. And it is a matter of personal responsibility. That, I think, is one of the big distinguishing characteristics between Americans and the rest of the world.
Well, I think if you take that argument to its logical conclusion, you dispense with the FBI, you dispense with the local police, and you simply go around shooting at each other and trying to protect your own individual properties in your own individual way. I mean, we know for a fact, I mean, every time there's a terrorist incident, the intelligence services will tear their hair apart because they didn't get it. And they make mistakes because they're human, just like you and I. The problem is that when they make mistakes, they really are big mistakes. Here in the UK, just this year, there have been 15 terrorist incidents which have been stopped. Now, those have been stopped and lives have been saved as a result. And the same thing with the FBI. Yes, they did not do right. they let someone get through their net in Parkland. They got someone, let someone get through their net. Several people get through their net in the past 18 months. But how many did they stop?
Arguably.
How many did they stop that would have gotten through if there was no FBI?
Arguably, how many people were stopped because of folks being armed and prepared to defend themselves? I think we're going around, we'll go in a circular argument. I just find it interesting that that's how basically.
I'd rather they were stopped by trained professionals. Well, by an amateur carrying an automatic rifle.
These trained professionals did not do the stopping, but that's another story. We'll continue this conversation, I think, a later date. But I think the important aspect of it is the differential between the European community, the first world, as we call it, the first world community that sees government as the ultimate arbiter of protection and safety. We here in the States take that on our own shoulders. We are responsible for ourselves. It's a difference, just a major difference in perspective. Tom, let's move on to another item. You've got a note here. I want to touch on it briefly because I don't want to belabor this. I want to get to the President Obama. You've got a note here related to the issue of Jared Kushner's clearance. Why is that of interest to the European community?
Well, you've always asked me, you know, to keep track of what's being reported here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And yesterday it was Jared Kushner was the headline.
Mm, really?
And as one of the commentators said, I mean, how can he be expected to act as a Middle East broker if he's not even allowed to see the intelligence reports from the Middle East?
That's an interesting observation. He does maintain a secret clearance. He just does not receive top secret clearance. And this is a decision, of course, being made by the president's chief of staff.
I have secret clearance.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, you failed miserably. You're not keeping your secrets. But let's move on to, since we're talking about the Washington scene, let's talk about the president's announcement yesterday that he plans to seek re-election in 2020. Has that gotten any coverage there in the European media?
Has he? Has he actually said it?
He has.
All I've seen here, it hadn't really made the papers.
Really?
All I've seen here is that he is about to.
Oh, no.
Has he actually made it public?
He made the public announcement yesterday, and he's actually identified his campaign manager. He's already begun.
It didn't make...
Oh, my goodness.
I think it was taken as a given that he would be running. Nobody, you know, I don't think anyone's thought that he would do otherwise.
I think that's a very astute observation. I, like you, have taken that as a given as well. All right, let's talk briefly about this. The continuing saga of the Russian connection in the U.S., and I'm curious about any further concerns in the European community as well. Is that still headline news in the European media?
Yeah, The Economist devoted like about 10 pages this week to the issue of Russian disinformation.
Wow.
And how basically they've decided that they're going to be the maverick and everything they're going to try and do will be to disrupt the political systems in the West. And they decided that basically back in 2014, according to what I've heard over the Ukraine affair, that they were going to go back to the old Soviet-style days, that they couldn't be part of the system, and so they were going to disrupt the system. And that means cyber attacks, it means disinformation. It's not so much supporting one group against another as it is trying to do everything to disrupt the process of democracy.
That's an important story and one that, of course, we need to be very cognizant of here in the States as well. But obviously, you said basically the West. So we're talking Western Europe and any countries that have, well, either a democratic republic or a parliamentary system, a democratic system of leadership.
Yes.
I think that's important. Moving on to another item here very quickly, but final question associated with Russia. Is that an indication that, quite frankly, in your opinion and those of European leaders, we're going to see a resurgence of the Cold War? It not necessarily in the same vein as the previous experience of the Cold War, but this new friction that is going to develop.
I think it could be worse.
Wow.
I think it could be worse. I think it could be worse because, you know, right at the heart of the Cold War, of course, is not just the different systems, but, you know, that's the ideological heart. but the weapons.
Right. Well, it's weapons,
and now you have more countries with more weapons than you had during the Cold War.
Right. We won't get into the weaponization of the world, but I understand where you're coming from. But it also goes back to the old spycraft issue associated with the Cold War. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, before we go to the break, wrapped up the Olympics this past week. I'm wondering, did that get much coverage? And is there any news or comments related to the fact that Kim Jong-un has expressed apparently some interest in talking to the U.S.? What has been the coverage?
That has gotten some interest.
Okay,
that's certainly got a great deal of interest and sort of heaves of or great sighs of relief from this side of the pond. The coverage of the Olympics itself has been limited. It's not very, it depends on which country you're from in Europe. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Switzerland, France, countries like that, a lot of coverage. Here in the UK, we always get a minimum number of medals, but this year we managed to get five, which is a lot for the UK, five golds in the Winter Olympics. You asked me the other day, off the air, Lockwood, why are the Europeans not doing more in talks with North Korea? Why aren't they going to be part of the talks? Do you remember that?
I do. That's the correct exact. That was the question I wanted to lead to. Yes. Do they feel that they're
sorry,
being...
I didn't mean to anticipate
you. No, you were right on. Is there a feeling that they're being left out? Is there a desire to stay out of it? What is the issue?
No, there's no desire to stay out. There's no desire to be left out. I think you have to understand the way the system works. And it was the same during the Cold War, during, say, the SALT talks and the ABM treaty and things like that. America always took the lead. It always took the lead, and then it always consulted with its allies, both at the NATO foreign ministers, NATO defense ministers level, and things like that. And so it got feedback and support, but they took the lead in the negotiations. Now, the reason for that is, quite simply, you don't want to have 30 people sitting down at the conference table if you can avoid it.
Agreed. I know. You're not going to accomplish a lot. My question is, though, is there... what is the overall feeling about North Korea? Do they see this as predominantly a U.S. problem, or do they see it as a world problem? And to your point, have just, acquiesced to having one country take the lead?
It is a world problem. It's not so much an acquiescence as it is pragmatism.
Okay, that's fine.
Diplomatic pragmatism.
I think that's an excellent, we'll conclude with that observation right there with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Stay tuned. We're going to get into issues there in his community. Got to find out about Brexit, and events in Europe and in the Middle East. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Tom joins us from London. It is nearly midnight, closing in on midnight there in London. So this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. I don't know why anybody wants to sleep at midnight in London, but where it's been snowing. Tom, let's move on to events there in London, as a matter of fact, and of course, the United Kingdom. The status of Brexit. We've been speaking about this for quite some time. This topic now, I'm trying to think, is almost 2 years old. And that is the decision.
And it's going to get older.
I can imagine, yes. The British decision to exit the European Union. What's the status of that at this point?
Well, I think it was late yesterday that the EU published its proposals for the next round of talks. Now, absolute key here is Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone into this before as to why. I'll be happy to do it again. But the EU has proposed that the tariff-free area, the customs union, includes Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to maintain a open border. Everyone wants to maintain an open border between North and South Ireland, Northern and Southern Ireland, in order not to get a repeat of the troubles there.
Right.
And also because of the importance of trade between the two halves of the island. The British have said, no, we cannot do that. That would mean basically that Northern Ireland would be part of the EU and not part of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cannot agree to that. And so you've really got a deadlock over Northern Ireland at the moment.
And by the way, you kind of anticipated this in your earlier conversation, along with Scotland, too, I might add. What is the future of Scottish independence? Is there a possibility?
Scottish independence, it's simmering. It's,
okay.
It's simmering nicely at the moment. All of the indications are that there is not insufficient support for an independent Scotland. And so the SNP has gone quiet on it. Now, it's very similar to the situation between Ireland, Northern Ireland, and Scotland, all the same in the respect that mm-hmm. most of their trade is with the UK.
Right.
And so although Scotland wants to be part of the EU, it doesn't want to be a separate part of the EU because or a separate country within the EU, because if it was, it would lose a lot of its trade with the UK.
Yeah.
And has much more trade with the UK or with England, shall we say, than it does with the EU. Or its trade goes through England
right.
to Europe.
And you know, this well, we're going to be paying attention to this for quite some time. Real quickly, before we move on to other issues, more move to the Middle East, as a matter of fact. Well, I want to go to Italy and then we'll go to Syria. Well, we're traveling all around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio, by the way.
Yeah. Hang on tight.
Theresa, tell me about Theresa May. What's the status of her politically? How's she doing?
Politically, you know, she's just hanging on there. Wow. She recently got criticized by John Major, who was a previous prime minister,
mm-hmm.
Basically for relying too heavily on her hard Brexiteers.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening. She's become completely dependent on the hard right end of her party. And that is limiting her scope for maneuver, both within the party and with her negotiations with the EU.
What are the chances, I went very quickly, what are the chances of us having another called election? Is there any possibility it'll happen in 2018?
It's anybody's guess.
Okay.
It really is. The problem is, there are a lot of people in the Conservative Party, in the Parliamentary Party, who are mm-hmm. very dissatisfied with her.
All right.
They want to see her go. But at the moment, the Conservative Party is so weak
that
they would almost lose
control,
without a doubt, to the Labour Party, which now is so far left that the Conservatives are terrified to call an election.
I can appreciate that. And of course, by the way, Jeremy Corbyn's challenges associated with the accusations that he was a dupe of a Russian spy or himself a Russian spy, very quickly, has that had any political fallout since our last conversation?
It seems to have died a death.
Okay. All right. That's
fine. Yeah, he seems to have satisfied everyone that he was not a spy.
All right. Let's move on to other political issue. Very quickly, the Italian elections.
Anyone's guess.
Well, the other aspect of this is, of course, Italy has been a ward of the state at various times for the European Union. What's the financial condition of Italy at this point?
It's doing a little bit better, but it's still pretty bad. It's got like 1.8% growth, which is up from about 0% not too long ago. The elections are going to be almost impossible. Everyone says it's going to be a hung parliament with a lot of very difficult negotiations to follow. And this one is even more difficult to call because they've introduced a new electoral system.
right.
where half of the senators and members of the assembly are elected by proportional representation, and the other half are elected by first-past-the-post simple majority votes.
Mm-hmm.
And the combination is making it very difficult to predict. On top of that, according to the opinion pollsters, 30% of the electorate are undecided.
Well, you know, you've got an interesting character in Italy, an individual who has had, if I'm not mistaken, a rather colorful and a scandalous career.
Yeah, a bit like yours.
Farley, Mr. Bersaglioni. What's the future of his? He was basically forced out of his leadership role, was he not?
Yep. And he wasn't allowed to hold public office for 5 years, but that now has expired. So he's staging a comeback. And it looks as if he is the most likely person to be the next prime minister.
And of course, we've
at the moment.
And we're talking about a rather scandalous environment involving many ladies, as I recall.
Yes. Many ladies, underage ladies, right. prostitutes, sex yeah. parties, a whole lot.
Okay. Italy's going to be an interesting thing to watch.
Tax fraud as well.
Wow.
Everything.
All right. Let's go to another event. And I want to go to this one very quickly. I want to go to Syria. I want to get to the politics in South Africa here in a moment. But Syria, we've been paying attention to the events in Syria and, of course, the possibility of a ceasefire and then not a ceasefire. Who's representing the UN in this? Is Europe involved in the activities in Syria? What's going on?
There are supposed to be UN talks which have been called and then not and then right. dissolved and called again, held in Geneva. They run sort of in competition stroke parallel with talks which the Russians have been trying to organize. But those talks, last set of talks, the rebels, either some of them turned up and walked out and some of them refused to turn up at all. The problem there is it's becoming a real quagmire for Russia now.
No question. Oh, for Russia.
For Russia.
For Russia,
it's for everyone, but the problem with Russia is that they don't seem to have enough of an influence over President Assad, and this latest ceasefire is a perfect example. I mean, you agreed a ceasefire earlier this week. The Russians agreed to it, a 30-day ceasefire. They're going to rush in humanitarian aid, and then they start bombing again. Is this because the Russians let them? Was it because the Russians don't have any control over Assad? Either way, it's not good. Either they're in collusion with Assad and doing the bombing, or they have no control over what he does.
All right. Very quickly, Tom, I want to move on to an issue of South Africa before we go to the next break. So I'm a real quick response to these questions. We've got Syria with Assad. We have President Erdogan of Turkey. We have the Ayatollah of Iran. And then if we have Putin of Russia, all having a role in Syria.
Question. And the Americans supporting the Kurds.
Well, okay. But I see that as really...
No, they do.
I understand that.
The Western Coalition supporting them.
Tom, we understand that. I want to go back to the four particular players that I'm speaking of, please. And my question is, which of those four actually is in charge of the Syrian conflict?
None of them.
Okay.
That's why it's a quagmire.
That's an understatement. All right. Let's move to South Africa for a moment. A new president, I understand?
A new president. He's taken over from the incredibly corrupt Jacob Zuma.
And what's the future?
New president's name is Cyril Ramaphosa.
Uh-huh.
And no sooner did he, within 2 days of taking office, he held a budget. And basically said taxes are going up
mm-hmm.
and expenditure is coming down. Now, why is that? Well, before Zuma took office, you had growth in South Africa of 5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's now down to about 1%. You've now got unemployment of 36%. The civil service is staffed basically by criminal elements. And Ramaphosa has to try and get those out of office.
Okay, real quick question for you, because we've only got a little less than a minute. What is the future of South Africa? Will it respond positively to these changes, or might we see armed conflict?
We might see armed conflict. It really is down to how Ramaphosa handles it. Basically, Zuma is supported by the Zulu tribe. They are not happy with the fact that their man is out. They're not known to sit back and take these things in their stride.
Because this is an important role. South Africa does have a major influence on the rest of the African continent, does it not?
It is about half of the African economy. You know, it is the industrialized Western state in Africa.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tomorrow's news today at LookAheadNews.com.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Water, water, where? Oh, certainly not everywhere. Not anymore. The essential ingredient to life is becoming a disappearing and fought-over commodity. Nowhere is this more obvious at the moment than in relations between Egypt and Ethiopia over rights to the historic Nile. Since the dawn of civilization, waters of the blue and white Nile have joined at Khartoum to form the Nile River, the only source of water along its 1,600-mile journey to the Mediterranean. Egyptian civilization grew out of the Nile 3,000 years ago. It is the reason that Egypt can continue to support its fast-growing population of 100 million. But only just. The UN is predicting that the combined pressures of a growing population, rising sea levels, and industrial pollution will result in severe water shortages by 2025. And that is without the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which is due to open later this year. GERD, as it is known in Ethiopia, will span the Blue Nile near the border with Sudan. It will cost $5 billion. Every penny paid by the Ethiopian government. The dam will power a hydroelectricity plant expected to treble the country's electricity output. Ethiopia will be transformed from a country which can supply power to only 25% of its 75 million citizens into the powerhouse of East Africa. But what about Egypt? The Ethiopians claim that the dam will have zero impact on water flowing through Egypt. But according to the Geological Society of America, the dam will reduce by at least 25% the flow of water through the land of the pharaohs, as 85% of the Nile waters originate in Ethiopia. The Egyptians have, unsurprisingly, complained loud and long. In 2013, former President Mohamed Morsi threatened war over the dam. From the Ethiopian point of view, GERD has become more than a giant economic benefit. It is now an issue of intense national pride, similar to that felt by the Egyptian public over the Aswan High Dam in the 1950s and 60s. As the date of completion draws near, the tensions are rising faster than water levels are sinking. In January, Egyptian, Sudanese, and Ethiopian foreign ministers met in Addis Ababa to try to reach a compromise. Total failure. Part of the problem is the prevaricating position of Sudan. It has a 1959 agreement to share Nile waters with Egypt, to which Ethiopia is not a party. At the same time, it will benefit from the electricity power generated by GERD. And finally, it is in dispute with Egypt over the ownership of the 8,000-square-mile Halaib Triangle bordering the Red Sea. Sudan, therefore, has a foot in both camps. The problem is further complicated by political instability in all three countries. Sudan has its long-running north-south split. Egypt is a dictatorship on the verge of enduring another joke election. Ethiopia is trying to balance the demands of half a dozen competing and at times warring ethnic groups. A conflict over the rights of the Nile could be just the cause any of them needs to unite the populace behind an otherwise unpopular government. Water is also causing difficulties elsewhere in the world. China has built 7 hydroelectricity dams along the upper reaches of the Mekong River, with plans for 21 more. This is lowering water levels in Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, and Vietnam, which rely on the Mekong waters for a fisheries industry worth $7 billion a year, as well as irrigation for the region's rice paddies. China is potentially the world's biggest threat to water supplies. It controls the headwaters of the Indus, Ganges, Irrawaddy, Salween, and Mekong rivers. 1 billion people are provided with fresh water from those rivers alone. And China's rapid industrialization and pressures to move from coal power to water-powered electricity generation is a threat to all of them. Populations are growing. Industrialization is growing. Food production is growing. Water is shrinking.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Again, this portion has been pre-recorded. I want to talk about two items very quickly with you, Tom, as we wrap things up. One, a serious item, and the other one, well, I'm going to be interested in hearing about snake in a lunchbox. But the topic I do want to talk about, we mentioned Syria a few moments ago, and this is a big issue. And that has to do with your note about the big bank accounts of ISIS. And we've known for a while that they were, well, shrewd, I use that word cautiously, government entity, and had amassed a large amount of wealth. Tell me about this big bank account, and where is this money, and who has control of it?
Well, it's estimated by the intelligence agencies at $5 billion. And it's being held mainly in gold bullion in Turkey.
Okay.
That's what they think. You know, there are other places as well.
And Erdogan is not taking possession of it?
Well, it's difficult to find it. You know, it's not that easy. It's the ones he can find, he takes possession of. And gold is transportable. So if they think he's about to swoop on their assets, they can stick them in the back of a van and drive off to Switzerland or back to Syria or Armenia or somewhere like that.
Who's in charge? Who's in charge of this account?
Well, the ISIS leadership. Okay. You know, those who've managed to escape in the top leadership, and they've managed to escape across the border into Turkey. They had roughly 100,000 fighters in Syria and Iraq, of which probably 80% died, literally died.
Right.
But they've got this money, and they have said they're going to use it to finance operations elsewhere around the world. It could be in Libya. It could be down your street.
Right.
What have you? It doesn't, you know, $5 billion goes a long way in terrorist terms.
Go a long way in any terms. The question, of course, goes back to Syria. Is there still remnants of ISIS in Syria, and are they playing any role in the earlier conversation we were talking about, the ceasefire? Is there?
Not really.
Okay.
It's estimated that they have lost 98% of their territory.
Wow. Okay.
So there's a very small remnant hanging on to 2% of what they used to have.
All right. I want to wrap it up with usually a humorous story. I'm going to be interested about the humor on the associated with this. Snake in a lunchbox. And Tom Arms.
I must say, you're right. There's not much humor. Possibly one of the most venomous snakes in the world is a little green snake called a juvenile.
Hmm.
And one day in Adelaide, Australia, a young mother opened up her child's lunchbox to see whether or not he'd eaten all his fruit. And there, in the lid of the lunchbox, probably had been there for a week or so, was a juvenile snake.
Mm.
Can you imagine?
No. My goodness.
It kills within seconds. But, I mean, that's the sort of thing which you don't want to see in your child's lunchbox.
Absolutely not. And this is one of those scary stories. We know so little about Australia here, particularly I, for one, know so little about it. It's still pretty rugged country, is it not?
It is. You know, it's very interesting, drawing it back here to the UK, we really don't have poisonous snakes. We don't have poison ivy. We don't have poison oak. It's one of those countries with very little things that can hurt, very few things that can hurt you, well, other than people with knives.
Well, and folks driving around in vehicles, but we won't go into that because that has been a scary situation as well. Tom, as always, we do appreciate your time this afternoon. And as a reminder, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate our foreign editor's sleeping schedule. It's now closing in on midnight where he is in London. And Tom, are you, as we wrap it up, are you going to be making any snow people? We got to be careful.
No, I'm going to make a fire in the fireplace.
All right. Well, enjoy your snowy week there in London. Thanks for being with us, as always.
Okay. Bye-bye, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of Look Ahead News and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.